It is interesting to see how strong the reaction has been to the boycott divestment movement. You know, professors have definitely lost their jobs. Kids have been beaten up. And it seems to be reverberating at that level, even below the corporate media surface. It's out there in the grassroots.
Indeed.
Well, that is one positive note to end on, John Pilger. We're going to watch that movement very closely. We thank you so much for taking the time out and joining us for this edition of Flashpoints and for your many years of focus on what we feel here at the show is one of the most important issues in the world. So we thank you for your great work and for doing this reporting on this particular very censored subject. Thanks, John Pilger.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you for all the work you've done on Palestine. You've had many of your guests have come on and explained, as you have, that Palestine is still the issue, and that has been invaluable. So thank you to you.
All right, take care of yourself, and good luck to you. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
And that brings to a close Flashpoints for today, Wednesday the 12th. The Dirtbag is coming up next. After a couple of announcements today, we'll be talking about conserving soil moisture, summer pruning, and grafting during this dry season. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today, and those of you who are merely members, we appreciate that, but we'd really love it if you became members. And you can do that by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says donate. We thank you in advance for that. After a couple of announcements, we'll have the dirt bag coming right up.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 16th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 13th through 16th at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. The Northwest String Summit is a four-day celebration of Americana and bluegrass music hosted by the Yonder Mountain String Band. Guests include Green Sky Bluegrass, Elephant Revival, Fruition, Blitz and Trapper, the Shook Twins, and many, many more. Again, that's the 16th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 13th through 16th at Horning's Hideout, 21277 Northwest Brunswick Canyon Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information about the festival, performers, parking, and admission can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, here we are on the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's the Dirtbag. I'm Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And beside me is Jim Gilbert.
Hi, Glenn.
And across from me is our ace engineer, Tammy Dean.
Hello.
Yay, Tammy.
She's the oil that makes this well-oiled machine run.
Sorry, we could just be talking here and talking and talking, and nobody would hear us.
That's right.
Oh, Tammy.
That's right. Okay, well, we've got a full show as usual. We'll try to remember to the best of our abilities what is going on with Home Orchard Society, because they've got some workshops coming up for grafting fruit trees this time of year. In August. Not bud grafting.
Budding.
Yeah, budding.
Budding.
So, well, okay, we'll get to that in a bit. Jim will be talking about our POTM, Plant of the Month, jujube. By the way, Jim, do you know what makes an acronym an acronym?
The letters AC, no, I don't.
Well, I used to confuse that. Like somebody, I might have referred to the FBI as an acronym. No. That is wrong. Why? Because if it was a true acronym, we would say FBI or something like that. But so NATO, that is an acronym because we don't say NATO.
Got right. It. Got it.
So, okay.
So what was that in relation to?
POTM.
Ah, so we don't say POTM.
Well, we could, I guess, but that might be president of the...
Of the Middle East.
Well, it could be, yes. But on topic, jujube. Jim will talk about that. It's blooming now, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Bees are buzzing around it.
Would that be honeybees as well as other bees?
Honeybees love it.
Okay.
Yeah, a good bee plant for blooming this time of year.
By the way, somebody sent me a photo of honeybees on her... Oh, what was it? A kind of a big white flower. Edible, not persimmon, but pomegranate?
Well, it could be a pomegranate, white flower, but
yes.
Most pomegranates are red flowered.
Well, this one was white, and she...
And I haven't seen much bee action on them. So once in a while, a hummingbird, but not too
yeah,
many.
Yeah, well, she showed me a photo, sent me a photo.
And it was a pomegranate.
Yes, yes. And I will soon be posting that on my What's in Bloom this month.
Okay.
The Bridgetown Bees.
Can't wait.
That's right. Okay, then we will be talking about, it's the dry season, watering and conserving moisture in the plants. I think it's been now, this is day 25 without rain, measurable rain. It's the dry season.
It's Oregon. I love it.
I noticed in the newspaper today that, in the weather page, that normally by this time in June, we would have had three-tenths of an inch of rain.
Yeah, I haven't put out the cup to collect that.
You haven't missed anything.
That's right.
We also have, we'll continue our conversation from last month, although we really didn't get to it, about summer pruning, right? Because I've started doing that in my own orchard, and this is the time for that. And then we'll branch into a discussion after the garden stumper at half past the hour of why isn't my plant growing, or why isn't my plant blooming, or why isn't my plant producing fruit?
Or why don't I have a plant?
Yes, that might be a longer discussion. And we invite you to call in to ask questions along those lines for whatever plant it happens to be. And that number, 503-231-8187. We welcome your questions at any time. Oh, and also on our dictionary, our dirtbag dictionary this month, the word is... inoculant.
Mm-hmm.
Inoculant. And we will talk good. About that. Okay.
Okay.
Jim, you're up. Jujubes.
Jujubes, yeah. Very interesting plant. It's native to China and probably some other countries in Asia. A fruit that's not well known here in North America, but some people know about it. And the fruit can vary in size from... maybe a small egg to a large apricot, depending upon the variety. When it's ripe, it turns a chocolate brown in color. And again, depending upon the variety, it can be quite sweet or a little bit tart with a kind of an apple-like texture. And some have some different flavors, some a little like one we have, a little bit like coconut flavor. But a very nice fruit for eating and very popular dried. I have at home a box of dried jujubes from Korea that we received from a friend there. The tree doesn't grow very large, at least in our climate. I've seen some in China, some decent-sized ones, but I'd say here probably 12 to 15 feet would be maximum. Now, I'm certain there's a listener out there that's got a bigger one, but at least at our place, that's about as big as they get.
Are these pruned regularly?
The large ones are not pruned. The ones we prune regularly don't get, of course, it's so big.
Well, I mean, would one endeavor to prune regularly? I mean, every year to enhance fruit growth?
Or? We haven't found that to be necessary, for removing some, occasional crowding branches or crossing ones or something. We really don't do much with them, and they bear a lot of fruit. The flowers are small. Lots and lots of little flowers, and as you said, Glenn, they're blooming right now, and they're fragrant, and the bees really, really are attracted to them. Some say that some of the varieties are self-fertile. I generally would probably plant two different types, two different varieties, just to be sure that you're going to get a good fruit crop. Wood is really hard. In fact, we graft it. It doesn't really work for budding, and it's really hard to graft because the wood is hard. It's about the hardest wood of any fruit tree we grow.
What kind of rootstock do you use for that?
We use jujube seedlings.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. So we plant the seeds, and then it takes about a year and a half for them to get big enough to be grafted. But really like the plant, and there are a number of varieties out there. If you have on the One Green World website or in the catalog, you'll see many of the ones that we grow. And I think it's just a really nice, small, attractive small tree for the yard.
And it takes sunlight like all the other trees?
It likes sun, yeah. And there's nothing about our climate that hurts it. Reportedly hardy to probably minus 20.
And pests?
None.
None to speak of.
I've never seen any pests. The only thing that can happen sometimes if the fruit's not fully ripe, it's ripening and you get an early rain in the fall can cause some of the varieties of fruit will crack a little bit, but it's not normally a problem.
Does it ripen off the tree or on the tree?
On the tree, yep.
So you have to leave it there until it's ripe and then... Yeah, and they like apples.
They fall if you don't pick them. I mean, they ripen a little bit. If you pick them at when they're brown, they can get a little sweeter on the counter.
Mature a little bit.
Yeah, but just generally a really, really nice tree. And we've been growing them I've got some trees, probably 30-year-old trees at the farm. So, had them for a long time.
And what do you do with the fruit?
Well, I eat them fresh.
Are there seeds or a pit?
There's one long seed in the center, and I just eat it kind of like an apple. Would you like you'd eat a small apple?
Chew around the pit type thing.
Right. And as I said, they're very popular dried. Another name for this fruit is Chinese date. I would say that some of the, when they're dried, they are definitely, maybe not as sweet as a date, but they're really quite sweet.
When do they ripen?
Late September into October. Might even go to November.
October, we might have a taste test here then.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
You may have brought some in the past. I just don't remember from year to year.
Yeah, well, I don't remember either, but...
Well, you haven't then.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Jujube.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's take a break here. I've got... a little different situation here. I'll give the backstory here that what has been monopolizing my life in the last 2 weeks and certainly the last 4 days was the International Master Gardener Conference going on now at the convention center. Last year they requested they were going to have a little tour. And so they asked if I could have my garden on the tour. And I agreed, of course, but that's pretty motivating for you to, you know, to get the garden in the best shape that you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having guests in your house.
Right.
Well, this was 2 busloads of the. The guide might have been from Oregon, and the host, Master Gardener, were from Oregon, but everybody else was from elsewhere, other mm-hmm. states. I don't know that I had any international Master Gardeners, although it was designed for international Master Gardeners. And so I have been, you know, focused on this tour. So here, that's why I chose all the tunes this time from Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, how nice, Glenn.
And we've heard quite a bit about the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, this being the 50th anniversary of its release.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also the 50th anniversary release of Magical Mystery Tour, released in 1967, but in November.
It's the 50th anniversary of several things.
Well, everything that happened 50 years ago, I think it's the anniversary
of. That's right. When I left Portland, I got kicked out of Portland State for serving free soup in the park blocks, actually in the cafeteria where I wasn't supposed to be, and then I moved out of the city and went to the country.
And that started it all.
1967, yeah.
Huh.
Summer of Love.
Well, Summer of the Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, well, very appropriate music,
too. So I've chosen some of my favorites from it, but we'll start out with the title track here. So all from the Beatles. More to come from Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, we need to extend the show a little bit today, Glenn. play
some more selections there.
That's right.
Okay, well, as we've mentioned, we're in the dry season here, and fortunately it hasn't been a hot dry season for the most part. There have been some hot days, but in any event, when the sun is out beating on the soil, bare soil, that dries out the soil in a hurry. So let's talk some techniques that one can use for having the right amount of moisture in the ground and not having to add as much. But you pretty much will have to add some. You grow anything without water on purpose?
Well, the local crop, as you may know, two crops that I can think of, grapes and filberts, are often grown in Oregon without irrigation. So we have some pineapple guavas that don't get much water because we don't have a way to do it. And they survive okay, but they don't do as well as if they get water. And I think pretty much every horticultural crop in the valley besides those, you know, you really have to water it. I mean, you have to have some water.
Back in my youth, so many years ago, well, it wasn't 1967, but probably started in 1970, moving pipe in the family farm down there, and we moved them in. Oh, a lot of things. Yeah. From mint was one of their big crops, peppermint, but also beets and corn, bush beans.
You know, one of the things that I noticed with some chagrin is people using big sprinkler irrigation in the middle of a hot day. You know, we've pretty much converted all of our field irrigation to drip irrigation for all our permanent plantings. The only time we use overhead sprinklers now are when we're trying to establish a cover crop. And then we try to do that either late in the day or early in the morning when you have less evaporation, because there's so much of that water that you're spreading, you know, spraying out there is going to evaporate.
That's true. Maybe they don't have to pay the water bill.
Yeah. Well, they're paying electrical bill to most where I live. You know,
right. That's true.
It's pumps.
Well, you know, we could have a two-prong approach here in that, well, there are different types of irrigating, and then, well, what do we do conserving the water
right
there too? So let's first of all talk about getting water to there. And then you've made reference to drip irrigation, or generically I might refer to that as trickle irrigation, because there's other types, you know, soaker hoses mm-hmm. would also go into that.
Sure.
Category. I think even maybe some of those, they're old-timey things, but I see them still used, that they're kind of soaker hoses that are green, generally a two-track. They're wide, 2 inches wide or so.
Oh, yeah.
With a little...
They make a little spray that comes out instead of just...
Right.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, well, I still see people use them, so I don't know if they're selling them or they're just old-timers like me.
Right.
But it's not the, you know, the impulse sprinkler, the
right.
Or
right.
the back-and-forth one, which is good for running under.
Yes.
And whatnot. But for homeowners, generally, trickle irrigation is much more efficient and puts the water... more where you want it than overhead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there can be some issues when your plants do get watered overhead late in the day or late in the evening, where water then would remain on the plants and funguses would grow then.
Mm-hmm.
So the general recommendation is to irrigate in the morning, water in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When does watering become irrigating?
Well, I would say irrigation.
An acre?
Maybe. I mean, probably commercial versus at home, you know, home gardening. Although, you know, maybe you could irrigate your home orchard.
Yeah, I wonder what the definition is.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's pretty interchangeably used.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't hear a farmer saying, well, it's time for me to go out and water.
Water my crops?
Yeah. Well, it just came to me. But
yeah. It's good.
Well,
yeah. We can talk about words.
On a long ago radio program that I had 40 years ago, it was the mostly rhetorical minute.
That was the name of it?
Yeah. And so I would just ponder on something for a minute. That would be one.
How many listeners did you have?
Well, we'll see. My girlfriend.
Yeah.
One.
One that you knew about, right?
Right. No, we had things like, you know, if I was to ask you what time it is when the minute hand is at 5 o'clock or five. Oh, geez, I forgot to silence my phone here. So please excuse me while I do that.
Somebody calling you to stop talking about words and talk about plants.
I was going
to
silence that during the break too. In any event, so if the minute hand was at 5 minutes after 11 and the 11 o'clock and the hour hand was on 11, what time would you say that was? What time would you say it was, Jim? I'm just asking you here.
Well, 11:25 is what I'd say.
No, when it was on the 5.
Right.
What time would it be?
The minute hand on the 5.
Right.
It's 25 minutes after the hour.
Oh, excuse me, on the 1. I'm sorry. 5 minutes past the hour. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Just give me a dope slap. So 5 minutes past the hour, what time would you say it is?
11:05.
Yeah, there it is. That was perfect. Why don't we say 11:05? Mostly rhetorical.
Yeah.
That's the minute.
Yeah, 5:03, you know. Why do we
That's
say,
right.
You know, I oftentimes, if I'm talking to somebody from another country, I'll usually place pronounced zero, 503, so forth.
But, well, that's just part of our culture, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, keep talking here. I'm gonna
silence your phone.
Yes, I sure am here.
So I think we talked a little bit about the what we use out at the nursery. You know, we've all of our plant collections now, we have put landscape fabric over the soil, so that has really reduced our weeding. I mean, so when you talk about water use, one of the big things is to not have weeds, because if you've got shrubs or plants or vines and you've got a lot of weeds growing underneath them, the weeds are going to take the water and rob the water from the plants, because the weeds have shallower roots. So what we did is we had these plantings, and I've seen this in a lot of other places too, but we actually just sort of cut back the grass underneath the plants. We didn't have to weed everything. We just cut it back, and then we just covered that all with the weed mat. So we just laid the weed mat on top. And it's about
had your irrigation pipe down.
We actually did the irrigating from on top, so we could see that it was working.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, very good.
And the weed mat is permeable. It's not rapidly permeable. You can't pour water on it, but with trickle irrigation, it works fine to get the water to the soil, to the plant that way. And it's really helped us a lot, because of the lack of labor we have. We don't have a lot of people to go out and do the weeding, and it's made a huge difference. And plants are happy, and everything seems to be going well.
For the home gardener who probably wouldn't want to look at the fabric, you know, you could do the same thing, though, with judicious applications of mulch or compost would probably be the best. And that is one of the drawbacks of trickle irrigation that's out of sight or underground, in that your first inkling that the plant is not getting water is when it's dead.
Or at least wilted.
Yeah.
Right.
Or beyond salvaging. So, you know, in many respects, you know, having the water on top where you can see it is good. And that's how I've evolved my irrigation system, which I've talked about in the past, where I've drilled small, very small holes with a needle in PVC pipe, and the water actually comes out in a little sprinkle rather than drip. But I can see where the water is going. I know it's going there. I can put in transplants and water same day, because it's not going to cut them over, and the water's getting there right now.
Sure. So what we use two different methods. The easiest method for putting down the line, we use like what we call drip tape.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. You're probably familiar with that.
And
I'm not sure if you can buy that in smaller amounts. We buy a large roll of it, and it comes different spacing. You can cut it like 8-inch, 12-inch. Where the openings are. You have to have a filter on your hose end, course, so that you don't get little particles in there and plug the holes. But that's really, it's really easy, and it works really fast. The other way is use poly pipe and emitters, and you can get those at a store, Fisher Supply in Canby, for example, irrigation supplies. Anybody that sells irrigation supplies is probably going to have
most garden stores have, you know, all sorts of arrangements now.
And with that, we usually put the emitters in. Like if it's a fruit tree, well, we don't put the emitter right at the base of the tree. That's not useful, because the root system is out away from the base. You put the emitter at least a foot from the trunk in each direction. And if it's a big tree, I'd probably put it 2 feet from the trunk in each direction. And we usually put two emitters on one tree.
Part of the issue with vegetable growing is that you don't have a permanent arrangement, and you know, you're rotating crops, hopefully.
Right.
And so what you set up for one bed, your tomato bed, for example, is not going to be the same for carrots.
Probably drip tape would work pretty well in that kind of application.
It could, but, you know, once again, on the, you know, it's dripping out, and so what's the profile of where it's soaking underground?
We found with 12-inch spacing, we get a pretty good amount of water.
But it would have to, so you'd have to have a tape every 12 inches.
If the rows are 12 inches apart.
Well, I'm just thinking of like raised beds. You know, that might be 4x8, we'll say. Mm-hmm. See, it's, and then mm-hmm. the tape, right. you know, you have to hold it down with staples. And
yeah,
but, I mean, there's just challenges. And so that's, sure. and that's exactly why I've gone back to what I've started 25 years ago with this half inch PVC pipe that I drill a hole every 3 inches. And then it comes out in a little sprinkle. I have a valve at each bed. It's pretty elaborate.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But it's very efficient and does what I want.
So how do you make the hole with a hot needle? You
could my drill, just my 3/8 inch drill. I took it to the hardware store, or I took a needle to the hardware store when I bought it to see if it would chuck down far enough to hold a needle.
And the needle spins and makes a hole?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, this is pretty thin-walled pipe that I, mm-hmm. and I don't even know that you can get it now. Hmm. I think maybe the codes have changed and whatnot that the pipe is thicker walled, but it was pretty thin at that time and cheap.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
So and I've talked to other people when they see my garden and they think, boy, that's great, I'm going to do that. And then they tell me that I just can't get a needle through the pipe. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because it's probably thicker. Mm-hmm. And I can get 10 or 20 or more feet done before the needle breaks. They're pretty cheap, you know.
Needles.
Yeah.
I haven't bought any recently, but...
well, they're still, yeah. still cheap. Yeah, even though it's 30 years later from when you bought your needles.
All right.
Yeah. So the other part then of the equation then, well, is after we get water into the garden or into the soil, well, what do we do? Well, you've got this landscape fabric and then, but, you know, 2 or 3 inches of compost will do a great job of not only conserving the moisture, but adding organic matter to the soil, nutrients there, and preventing weed growth and the soil from heating up, getting too hot. So, you know, that's the nice thing about small space gardening is that you can baby your beds mm-hmm. and your plants.
Sure.
Which is different when you're working with, you know, dozens of acres or
right.
100
yeah,
acres.
Yeah, and we have used a lot of, there's a lot of straw available in our area uh-huh. from all the grass seed farmers, and that's what we used to use in abundance. But you had to apply it every year, and plus the weeds, you know, will find their way through it if they're tough weeds. It's not the barrier that the weed, that the landscape
yeah.
fabric provides.
Right. Right.
One big mistake, though, I learned much to my chagrin, was that don't put anything on top, even though you may not like the look of the fabric. If you put something on top of it, like, for example, bark dust or straw or something to make it look more natural, that can also provide a seed bed for things to grow from the top down. And even mm-hmm. though the fabric is quite tight, fine roots can find their way through it.
And they're the devil to pull up then.
Oh, man.
Because you're pulling up the whole...
right, well, you just...
Trying.
Right, they don't want to come up.
Right.
So we've learned not to do that.
Well, there's some ideas. If you have more and want to join the club, 503-231-8187. All right, let's go to our next little music break. And what do we have on this one? Penny Lane. Yeah, and I'll give you a little backstory on this. It's a little poignant story here. But for many years, and when I mean many, I'm thinking 20 at least. Well, I'm not thinking. It is 20 that I've played in the pep band at the University of Portland for the basketball games. Hmm. And many people that have listened to me here will come up and say something at the ball game too. So it's just kind of fun. But there was a long time... director there who's a friend of mine, a personal friend of mine. In fact, the reason that I was started playing in some of the University of Portland bands, like the jazz band and now the pep band. But at about the same time that I started working on an arrangement for Penny Lane, because for those of you who didn't know Penny Lane, the song, there is a marvelous piccolo trumpet solo. And my friend Philip was a trumpet player and also played piccolo trumpet. If you've ever seen a piccolo trumpet, they're just a little cute thing. But I mean, it's shaped like a trumpet, but it's no longer than a piccolo.
Never heard of it.
Well, it's real high. You know, it's an octave higher than a regular trumpet. And so I started working on this arrangement thinking, but boy, this would be great for Philip. You know, that'd be quite a showstopper in the pep band, and he was quite a showman. But gosh darn it, if about that same time that he, long story short, was diagnosed with brain cancer, and he was never able to play the piece, you know, and I've never even had it performed because who else would be playing the piccolo on it? But anyway, so we'll listen to the Penny Lane with at least far enough to listen to the piccolo trumpet solo.
Great.
So, for Philip.
Penny Lane.
Yes, the piccolo trumpet there on Penny Lane. There's more at the end there, too, but that's quite all right. Okay, before we get to the garden stumper, Carol's got a... I don't know if maybe she's going to stump us. All right, Carol, you're up.
Hey, I'm kind of assuming you guys are organic gardeners. Is that the truth?
That is. That's the truth.
Okay, I'm wondering if you give any thought or have any more information. I know you mentioned that you're using PVC piping for some of your watering to the phthalates and the bisphenols that are in the, most of the hoses and the fabric, the landscape fabric.
Well, I've certainly given it some thought, but I've used these things for so long that I'm sticking with it. Jim?
What I'm wondering is if you've looked at any options, are the manufacturers coming out with any options now that, you know, things get banned? There are six classes of chemicals, and they're going to start banning them by class as opposed to by, you know, bisphenol A was replaced with F and S, which
yeah.
are worse than the A, and
well,
wonder if you guys have any options to the regular hoses and landscape fabric that so many of us use.
You know, if you're using just regular, not regular, but PVC pipe, you know, there is, you know, your water line comes in from the street and in your house, you know, that has,
exactly.
you know, hopefully that was, you know, it's not the same.
Probably is, though.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, you know, I've thought about it, you know, and I've picked my poisons and maybe literally. And so... That's where I'm at. I still use it. You know, I've used these pipes for... I haven't bought pipe probably for 10 or 15 years. Just repurpose it, drill more holes. And Jim, have you given
right.
that any thought?
Oh, you know, certainly, you know, we think about things like that. And, you know, we look for alternatives. And there's sadly not a lot out there that I can find. I mean, we've talked about trying to use biodegradable plastic where we have for our raised beds. You know, and we're still investigating that possibility, but
yeah, that, you know, to me that would be, you know, if it breaks down into smaller pieces of plastic, which maybe you would eventually, if they're starch based or something like that, you know, they might disappear, but in the meantime you're dealing with millions
exactly.
of small pieces of starch based plastic, and
yeah,
there's not a good... I agree, Carol, that how do you water?
Well, that's the thing. I try to get a hose that doesn't have a lot of toxins in them, and I know Naomi's Garden Supply sells some of them. But, you know, I just want to encourage all the listeners to be aware of how many toxins are going into our food supply just because of that, because of landscape fabric.
Yeah.
And start pressuring the manufacturers and Home Depot and whoever we're buying stuff from to get options.
You know, one thing that I have not ever thought about, Carol, and maybe you have some light onto this, is what are, if you want to be certified organic, what do they require for irrigation? Do you have any idea?
I do not. Yeah. I do not have any idea. And I've even heard that even though you're certified organic, there's a list of stuff you still have to use, you're required to use on your plants. There are some great classes about this. They're under sixclasses.org. You can watch some video talks and things about solvents and phthalates and bisphenols if you go to six.
Oh, okay.
Classes.org. There's a bunch of information, and you might be able to, that's put on by the Green Science Policy Institute. You may be able to get a hold of those folks and see what they know.
Okay. I'm going to talk to organic farmers that certified that I know and see what their, if they have any special requirements for that. So, but
great. Well,
good
thanks
topic.
For letting me bring it to your attention.
You're
thanks
very good.
Much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. Jim made some notes there. Good for you, Jim. As I say, don't think it, ink it. Okay. Let's, it's time for the Garden Stumper, brought to you by Jim.
Remember what?
Oh, what happened? Well, I guess we're still on the air.
Okay,
Jim.
All right. So many of the listeners probably know that figs can bear two crops. One
very crop. Rarely here in these parts.
No, quite common.
Okay.
Down here too as well. And the first crop comes on the old wood, which is the wood that grew last year, and the second crop is produced on the new wood that grows this year during the current season. And one of the reasons that this is a garden stumper is because I actually brought some dried figs from the first crop of probably about my favorite fig tree, a fig variety for the Northwest, which we can talk about in a moment. But at any rate, so what is the name of the first crop? It has a special name that it's called.
Well, let's narrow it down. What's the second crop called?
It's just called the main crop.
Oh, okay.
But the name of the first one is not, the name is not the first crop. It has a much more attractive name.
Well, and this is a bit, it's, if you're talking about Desert King, it's a bit misleading because the main crop of the Desert King is the one that's coming now or the one that's coming later?
Well, okay. So you're absolutely correct, Glenn. I don't know that there's a special name for the second crop. I sort of made that up on the fly.
Oh, I see. Well,
but we'll call it the second crop. But the first crop has a name that's not first crop.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, and I guess what I'm trying to get at, and let me give you the number, speaking of getting, 503-231-8187. That's the one that you call with questions or answers.
Could you go do that one more time?
503-231-8187. Okay. Well, Desert King, the second crop, never amounts to anything for me.
Yeah,
and I mean they're little. They put on a crop, but they're hardly ever edible.
And do you know why?
Because we live in Portland.
Because it's really not a king at all; it's a prince. No, it's actually because that second crop requires pollination by the Blastophaga wasp, the fig wasp,
which is not native to
which
here.
Which doesn't occur here, although I'm kind of interested in trying it out someday.
So, if one had that, or you couldn't hand pollinate because it's inside. It has to get poked with this.
And I've, interestingly, so here's a funny story. So I was in California a while back looking at they have a poster of fig varieties, a big, nice, beautiful poster showing all the ripe figs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was that on the poster, Desert King was this tiny little fig. And the reason was is because it was the second crop, unpollinated, and there was this little tiny fig, you know, which is like, I thought, this is crazy. Why would they show that as a representative?
You're right.
Fig of it?
That's crazy.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Back to the phone. Sunny.
Hello. Thank you for your show.
Sure.
I've got two fast questions for you. Thank you for sharing the music with us. And guess how much that, I think it was a Royal Air Force piccolo trumpet player, got for that portion of Penny Lane. How
well, let's see. Would it be more or less than the designer of the Nike swoosh? She got $35. Let's see here. Was it more than that or less than that?
More
than
that. Boy, does she, wow. That lady.
Maybe it was $350, but.
It was $80.
Wow.
And no residuals.
And
it's such a pivotal point of the song. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, but I'll bet you he what a story that he could tell his whole life.
Forever. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's still very happy.
Yeah, right. Probably worth it.
Yes. My other question was, since we see more and more bamboo growing and et cetera, bamboo piping and ceramic jointures, and then that could be organic, and then, of course...
You're talking about for irrigating?
Yeah. About hemp? And true rubber doesn't contain that weird stuff. It's the petroleum that contains it, right? So true rubber and hemp, couldn't that perhaps create some good hosing?
I mean, hemp can do just about everything, including milk the morning cow.
So I just wonder if you all ever get a chance, because, you know, you're pretty important. The organic farmers are increasing, and you might be able to send this forward to some manufacturers, and it sure would be nice to see some of that textile hemp really get going.
Well, that's good thinking.
Yeah.
Well, that's
creative,
just an idea.
Creative thinking.
I just love the bamboo. I love to see it. So.
Yeah, for home gardens, you know, particularly, that might work.
Yeah.
It could be rather... Well, I've seen some great, I don't know, if it might have been bamboo, you know, cut in half, used as troughs or as channels for rainwater coming off of a series of pipes. You know, one, it flows into the half-cut bamboo, and then it drips into another vessel, and then that goes to the garden or something like that. It was very fun to look at. In action.
Yeah, the only problem with the bamboo is the segment. There's a barrier between each segment, so you have to a long drill to or something to get that.
Well, if they're big, you know, 2-inch or 3-inch, and you're putting it in half.
Yeah, in half would work fine. Yeah. But if you're trying to use the whole, the bamboo is like a pipe. You'd have to drill out that center.
All right, hemp's probably going to be our best bet then. All right. Well, good suggestions. Thanks for calling. She's gone. Okay. I want to get in the last Beatles one, and then we'll come back to talk about what's wrong with my plant,
okay,
or why didn't my plant grow.
And we're waiting for people to come up with that name for
Yes, that's right, the name of the first crop of fig.
Yeah, it's a really nice name, and it's a really nice crop.
And it'll be informative, too, when you figure it out. Mm-hmm. This song, Your Mother Should Know, I just like it. And it's, just listen to the lyrics, you know, and then it reminds me of my mother, who, of course, she's still alive. And was a musician, and you know, your mother should know these songs. And now our mothers know these songs.
Would your mother come on the show sometime?
She would if she lived in town.
Hmm. Where does she live?
Eugene.
That's not that far.
I'll
go pick her up. Or did she take the train?
It's just right on the way. Well, something to consider.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Her name is Alves, Alves.
Oh, that'd be great.
She was named well before Elvis, but this is Alves.
Yeah, I think it'd be really fun. Could do that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, this is what your mother should know.
Let's all get up and dance to a song that was a hit before your mother was born. Though she was born a long, long time ago, your mother should know. Song that was a
song that was a hit before your mother was born. When was your mother born, Jim?
Oh, somewhere around 1918, 1920, something like that.
Yeah, 1930 for my mom. Okay, well, Jim brought this all came about, this topic of why isn't my plant growing, because a friend asked him that exact question. And so Jim trekked over there and did a little consult.
Yes.
Not that we're offering our services here, but...
not today, at least. It's an interesting subject. You know, I'm not sure. I bet there's a listener out there that might have some plant they planted and they're kind of don't understand why it's just sitting there. And in this particular case, it was a fig tree that was a present from her daughter, and she planted it out and in her yard.
Was it a Desert King?
You know, she lost the label,
okay.
So she didn't know what it was.
All right.
The case with many plants I found.
Yes.
Those pesky labels, you know. But anyway, so she asked me, you know, to take a look at it because the tree was maybe 4 feet tall and it's 10 years old. That's old, you know.
Yeah. And if it was bearing fruit, that'd be a great size.
It would be. But there was no fruit. And
okay.
There were leaves. The plant was alive. But what was wrong with that situation, there were two things. One, and probably the most significant issue was it was right in the middle of a grassy lawn with grass surrounding it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all there was no bare earth, just grass and a little fig trunk sticking up out of it.
And why would that be bad?
Well, because the grass is just a lovely competitor. And it says, hey, I want all the water and I want all the nutrients and I'm not giving anything up down below me.
So it was true that she wasn't giving any more to that tree then?
You would have to do a lot to get nutrients down below that grass cover to the roots of that tree. And even water itself. I mean, I'm sure some water percolates down there, but there just wasn't enough going on. So what I advised her to do was to take away the grass from around the trunk, and at least I suggested 18 inches in around, so a 3 foot diameter circle.
Okay.
And put some rotted steer manure or compost or something in that area, and don't let weeds grow there. And water it once a week. I suspect there's a root system down there, so you know, watering once a week in hot weather like we do, a good deep watering. And I haven't, you know, this was only just 2 or 3 weeks ago when I did this, so I haven't heard a report about new growth, but I'm...
It's putting on new growth. I mean, it has for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
I mean, things are really growing now in the figs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with this warm weather, they love that. And the other thing that was not, I don't think, so significant, but still not such a great spot, it wasn't a super location for it because it had a lot of afternoon shade. Sun's... you know, I mean, I think it could grow a lot better than it was just by reducing the competition. But
yes.
a more optimal location, and we talked about that, would be where you had good sun morning and afternoon.
Well, the key here would be to take away first and see how that works, because oftentimes, even though it doesn't get good sun when it's small, if it got taller, you know, 10 or 12 or 15 feet, then maybe it would be reaching better sun.
Right. Right, and it needs
to get there.
Has to get there first.
Right,
but it reminded me just about. I remember seeing this with my son who lives in Corvallis. Had done the same thing with a fig tree. Put it in a parking strip where it was surrounded by grass, and it was a good sunny spot and everything. But it just was so that the grass is just a tough competitor.
So another reason to minimize grass.
Yeah,
right.
And maximize mulch.
Oftentimes we get questions here on the air sometimes, but you know, well, why don't I have fruit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there can be myriad reasons for that, and we go down a checklist, a metal checklist anyway. Well, did you have blossoms? You know, well, if you didn't have blossoms, then something else is going on.
Right.
So in this fig case, it was 10 years old. She should have been having fruit coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, figs
in that case.
Figs are even varieties that don't necessarily ripen well here produce at least immature fruit that will be on the plant.
And
you'll have a crop of something. But without anything, you know, but I have seen figs that don't make figs because they're in the shade. They're not an optimal place. And, you know, this is just one example of a, it can be happening with any fruit tree or fruiting shrub or vine. The location's important, and what you do with the base of the plant, how you feed it and water it, are really the clues to having it be a happy, healthy plant.
Well, if you have a sad and unhealthy plant, we have a few minutes here if you'd like to give us a call, 503-231-8187. And we're also still looking for the answer to the stumper, which is the name of the crop that will be the first crop.
The first crop.
Right.
And
of figs.
Yeah. And just to, some of you out there may have Desert King or a King fig. Another, the original name was actually King, and because it came from a King estate in California, or a ranch, King Ranch, sorry, not estate. That's, you know, it's a winery. But it was King Ranch in California. And so then somehow where the desert got added to it, I'm not sure. But that variety is going to ripen soon. Its main crop, which is also the first crop.
And the name that we're looking for.
The name we're looking for. And another interesting part of this is that it's a type of fig that is not so common, called San Pedro. A San Pedro type fig has this characteristic that it ripens, the main crop is the first crop, and the second crop requires pollination. And most other figs, the common fig, which is more typical, like around here, Latarula would be one of those, Vern's Brown Turkey. I mean, most figs are the common type, which don't require pollination.
And do they only have one crop?
No, they have two crops.
But they still don't require, either one requires pollination.
But the second crop is the main crop, because the first one is not nearly as productive as the second one.
Okay, Tammy's on the phone, but she has signaled me that we do have a caller. Krista? Kristen. Good morning, Kristen.
Hello.
Hello, you're not Kristen, are you?
No, I'm not. My name's Jim.
It's all right, Jim, you're on the air.
Good. I don't have an answer to the first big question.
Okay.
I have another question.
Sure.
Grafting, is it possible to graft this time of year?
Yes. Although Jim probably wouldn't call it grafting, he'd call it budding. But it's, you know, technically it's a type of grafting.
If you have dormant wood that you have stored, and some wood you can do this with, like you can't keep apple wood in a refrigerator this long and have it be any good, but because it'll start to grow, the buds will start to push just because they want to push. But for example, I have persimmon wood in my cooler, and I could take it out and I could graft it right now. It's the main reason that it's pretty late, and the disadvantage of doing that now would be those buds are going to start to grow, and they have to grow, and the wood has to mature and become harden off enough so it can stay in the winter.
But our caller Jim probably, was it Jim?
Yes.
Doesn't have that.
So, no, I don't.
So are you thinking about grafting? What are you thinking about grafting?
I have some pear trees, and I really like the Bosc, and I don't really like my Dianju, and I wanted to try to graft some Bosc onto the Dianju tree I've got.
Well, you could bud it.
And this is a type of grafting, so.
Yeah, it's called, the simplest thing is chip budding, and I can't explain it so easily as you could probably just do a little search on it. I'm sure you'll find lots of information about it, but it's basically you take a bud from the desired one and find a small branch that's growing upright on the tree you want to change, and put that bud in that branch. And
there's a protocol for this, and this might be a good time, we're running out of time here, to talk about Home Orchard Society.
Yes,
You know, go to that website, and they'll have budding workshops coming up in August.
Perfect idea, Glenn.
Okay.
HomeOrchardSociety.org.
And, okay Jim, we want to, we got Kristen on the phone too, so thanks for your call. All right, Kristen has a quick question or answer.
Yes, my plum tree leaves are riddled with holes. What's eating them, and what can I do to save it?
Well, it's a fungus.
Yeah, it's not an insect.
Oh.
shot hole fungus. And I don't know, Jim, would you recommend she doesn't do anything? Just wait it out? Because
it doesn't look nice, but I probably wouldn't. If you're getting plums.
I'm getting plums.
It can withstand it.
Yeah, it's just
okay.
Just handle it.
Spray next winter or spring?
No, I never do. I think it's more weather related than anything.
Okay.
And varietal, too. Some varieties don't get it.
It's like a Brooks Italian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, we're right up against our noontime, and we have to. Thanks, Krista.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe people could do some research on this. Is it not a hard question?
Tell them the answer, Jim.
Should I do it? Okay.
Yeah.
Breba.
Breba.
B-R-E-B-A.
Right. So you can say, this is my Breba crop.
It's my Breba crop.
Yeah, man. Okay. Jim and I will not be here next month. Somebody else will be, but we'll be back in September.
Look forward to it.
Thanks for listening. That's our story. Be well.